Hello, everybody. This is Nolan Bianchi, host of the Locked On Red Wings podcast. We have an episode coming up today with Jack Bushman from the Locked On Blackhawks show. We're doing a little preview of what to expect from our new division rival. Just want to take the time to say thank you for joining us. I don't know, you know, if you're trying to ignore what's going on or if you're kind of just hoping for a little bit of reprieve, but I understand there's a lot going on right now. And these times are tough. I want to acknowledge that there are things of great importance that are happening. And I hope that we can provide you some respite at this time. So just want to say thank you for joining us. This is an extra long episode. I was going to cut a bunch of it, but I decided not to because, if you're having a rough day, maybe you could use the extra long episode. So once again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time today and every day. And we've got a great episode of Locked On Red Wings coming up next.
Hey guys, this is Mo Sider from the Detroit Red Wings. You guys listening to Locked On Red Wings.
Your Locked On Red Wings, your daily podcast on the Detroit Red Wings. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Locked On Red Wings podcast. Today is Thursday, January 7th, 2020. We've got a divisional rival preview. We've got Jack Bushman from the Locked On Blackhawks podcast. Before we introduce him, I'm your host, Detroit sports writer Nolan Bianchi, here today, as always, guiding the ship with me is longtime Red Wings fan and no longer the Kidney Stone Kid, Ethan Smith.
Woo.
Ethan, what's going on? How you doing, buddy? Hello. Feeling pain-free today?
Yeah, baby. Got everything out. Everything's good. Today's the first day I've felt 100% in about 2 months, so everything's golden.
Terrific. Well, let's welcome in our guest, Jack Bushman from Locked On Blackhawks. Jack, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going good. Nolan, Ethan, thank you guys for having me on. Kidney stone problems. Oof.
Yeah, dude.
That does not sound fun.
No, you don't really think at the age of 25 you're going to have a kidney stone, but I had one for 2 months.
What a trooper.
So, Jack, we have some things to talk about. We have a lot of things to talk about. First off, welcome back to our division. I guess you could welcome us back to the Central Division because we technically were the ones who left.
You did leave. You abandoned us.
Yes. and now we are back together, and we're both steaming piles of doo-doo. Talk to me about the Chicago Blackhawks team. Well, actually, let's back it up because they've had three straight bottom six finish or sixth or worse finishes. I think they finished 7th, 6th, then six or whatever in their division. Not very good at all. Not the Chicago Blackhawks that we became accustomed to seeing from 2009 until 2016. What went wrong over these last 3 years? Because I think that's a good starting point.
We've kind of been caught in this tough limbo period where we still had prime players, obviously Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Corey Crawford when he was here. We still had a lot of the prime pieces from our cup teams. But I think where we went wrong was just not addressing that that window had closed soon enough. And we were really, all the fans deep down, they knew this team wasn't good enough to compete for a Stanley Cup. But it seemed like the organization could never really accept that and look in the mirror and say, this is what kind of team we are right now. They're kind of holding on to the past. And I think that's really what's cost the Blackhawks in the past couple season and what's led to, as you said, a couple bottom tier finishes in the Central Division over the past three seasons.
That's pretty interesting because I mean, that's pretty much the same thing that happened to the Red Wings. It's just that the Red Wings had a more prolonged period of success. So it was like there were a lot of, I think there was a longer stretch where they were just like, fans were like, come on, dude, like, let's, like, fans wanted to rebuild before 2013. And that was the last time the Red Wings won a playoff series, I'm pretty sure, was then when they went to the second round and then they lost to the Blackhawks in 7 games. But from like 2011 to 2016, there was a lot of like, should we really be trading that guy away for Eric Cole right
what's
now?
What's the direction?
Yeah, exactly. And so
then we get Ken Holland telling us that, hey, if you guys want to rebuild, it's going to take about 10, 15 years.
So it's all just been a mess.
Absolutely.
On both fronts. So it's good to know that you're dragged down here with us.
I feel your pain.
I was kind of under the impression that this, like, the Blackhawks, they had they made the playoffs as a 12 seed last year. I was chirping Blackhawks fans about that on Twitter the other day because they were bragging about it. They were like, "Did you enjoy watching all that summer hockey from your couch?" I'm like, first off, so do you. There's a global pandemic. You're not allowed to leave the house. Second, congrats on being the first ever 12 seed to make the NHL playoffs.
I saw that one.
Something to hang your hat on right there. But I won't ridicule them too much because they were an exciting team. They beat the Edmonton Oilers. A lot of people going into that Vegas series, like, we knew what was up, but there was also maybe, could they?
It's playoff hockey.
Yeah, exactly. So what changed, like, I guess, like, over the course of this last season in that regard then?
Like, from, are you saying this offseason or from beginning last year as well?
Like, beginning last year as well.
So last year, we hadn't gone into the rebuild process yet, but we finally had some of the young pieces that have been hyped up in the system come up and make an impact. We saw Adam Boqvist jump up, and we also saw Kirby Dach make that step, obviously, in his first year since being drafted. So as we were before, but with more young prospects on the team, we are still in this limbo. Like, we're trying to win, but now Kirby Dach's here. Adam Boqvist is thrown as a 19-year-old. He's playing 22 minutes with Duncan Keith. So it wasn't really primed to be a successful season for the Blackhawks, but I definitely, even though we got in as the 12th seed, however you want to put it, I still think...
Was let in as the 12th seed, let's put it that way.
Earned that 12th seed. 23rd best team. Best team in the league, okay? But I think that playoff series was still very crucial for this team going forward. So even though it was, you know, another weird year where... We knew we weren't going to win the Stanley Cup, but we weren't in the process of starting over yet. There were still a lot of benefits, I think, from playing in that 2020 COVID postseason.
So what were the vibes of the fans? Were you guys more happy that you guys made it and then got your asses kicked by Vegas? Or were you guys more upset that you weren't in that draft lottery?
I'd say it was probably split 60-40. I'd say 60% of the people were pretty pissed we beat Edmonton. 40% of the people, it's like everyone was pretty mad. They're like, you blew away a top 10 pick. Especially when number one was still left there too. Everyone lost their minds. So, but I am on the side that I think this playoff experience is going to be a big part of Adam Boqvist and Kirby Dach knowing what it takes to be good in this league. Especially because playoff hockey is just a different brand. You could have as much regular season experience, but playoff hockey is its own different beast. And for these young guys to have that experience at such an early age, I think it was beneficial for the Blackhawks. So yeah, we didn't get, you know, maybe a high of a draft pick as some fans would have liked, but I still think later on in their development, this is going to be a big, big moment for them.
I kind of wanted to get more into the comments made by Taves following the trading of Saad and the release of Crawford this past offseason. Really just basically forcing the Hawks to really kind of admit that they're retooling or rebuilding. Like, I don't necessarily see a way that, I mean, unless you want to trade like Keith to a team that could be a cup contender and helping them. Like, do you really see anything happening with anything else with this core? Or do you think the core guys are locked in? I know Seabrook's untradeable.
Yeah, most of the core guys, I believe, are locked in, especially because they all have full no movement clauses. Taze, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, all full no movement clauses. And they've all been in Chicago throughout their entire careers. In Keith and Seabrook situations, they have families. Kane just had a kid. So
I did see that.
Cool. They've been in part of this organization for their entire careers. They've lived in Chicago. So I don't think anyone wants to go anywhere. There were even some talks. I know beat reporters asked Duncan Keith a little bit about whether he'd waive his no movement clause. And it sounded like he had no intention of doing that. So it sounds like the core pieces are going to be here throughout the rebuilding process. And that's really not a surprise. Stan Bowman confirmed that a couple months ago as well, that even if even from the Blackhawks team perspective, they want these guys here as well.
I think that makes good deal of sense. Like from their standpoint, like you got three cups, you've made all the money in the world. Why would you like, is chasing a ring, especially in the, like the, a time like this where moving is like, has so much extra stuff piled onto it. I'd probably do the same and
right.
Just ride out.
And for the numbers sunset. And for the numbers they cost too, the only one that really could get traded, even if they did theoretically want to waive that clause, is Duncan Keith, just because Seabrook's contract's atrocious. Taze and Kane are 10.5 mil. In order to trade either of those guys,
the how Blackhawks, much longer do they have on those contracts?
3 years, I believe. I believe it's 3 years. Yes,
I think I legitimately think I don't think anybody would pay Taves that money. I think
no, the Blackhawks, Hawks would have to eat some for sure.
Oh yeah, but I'm not sure about Kane. I think someone, if a team had that space, but quite frankly,
to find
a rebuilding team, I don't think he's going to waive his no movement clause to go to a team like that.
Yeah, I just don't think it makes sense financially or for what they want at this point of their career.
So do you think, like, I mean, you can't really, can you blame Stan for giving out those contracts that he's given out to those guys over the past couple years?
I blame him for the Brent Seabrook one, only the Brent Seabrook one.
Right.
Okay. You don't pay a 30-year-old that much money for 7 years. You don't pay.
I know. I'm sorry.
Thinking about it, it's like, no, it's okay. But like, if you're Brent Seabrook, you see that deal, you're like, yeah, where can I sign?
Yeah.
Yeah. You,
come on. You can't blame,
you can never blame
a
player for that.
No, but it's the same thing with Drew Doughty. You have no business giving a 30-year-old 10 years. Like, what are you doing? Don't pay a guy for what they've done. Pay for what they are.
But like, the crazy thing is about Doughty is that I don't think anybody in the world could have predicted the absolute drop off in analytical stats on him. Went from like one of the best in the league,
turnover junkie,
absolute worst
turnover junkie. He's always, I always see he's like leading the league in turnovers. I'm like, dude, and he still gets like Norris votes. I'm like, come on.
I know.
It blows my mind. So broken.
Matthew Tkachuk ruined this poor man's psyche.
For real.
All right. Well, that's actually a good lead into this next question that I have, because when the I think it was maybe the year or two after the Blackhawks won their first cup in 2010, and Stan Bowman made a lot of he got rid of some of the guys, some of the depth guys,
a bunch of them, like seven, all of them.
Yeah.
We looked at that from Detroit, like, now see, that's how you keep a contender together. No, that's how you got to make the tough decisions. You got to move guys out. You got to do this. You got to do that. Clearly there were some missteps along the way, and I want to get to that in just a second. But first, Jack, I wanted to get your opinion. Who do you think is going to win the Stanley Cup this year? Just on a, kind of gun to your head type deal.
Gun to my head. I am running it back with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, if you truly do believe that, why don't you do yourself a favor, get on over to betonline.ag and earn yourself a little bit of money. Sprinkle some cash onto that future. And if the Tampa Bay Lightning end up walking out of the season as Stanley Cup champions, then you will hit big once that happens. BetOnline.ag is giving our listeners a 50% welcome bonus when they sign up today for a free account and use our promo code LOCKEDON. We've got NFL playoffs coming up. We've got NHL and NBA coming up. NBA already started. We've got the national championship. We've got college basketball. March Madness.
WNBA.
WNBA. I think that doesn't play until the summer. They've got all of it. NFL games of the week, college football, and so much more. Do not sit on the sidelines any longer. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. It's very nice of those folks over at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts, to just throw a little 50% welcome bonus into your account right there. Thanks for coming. How's it going? BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Fedorov gives him the business.
All right, and before we get going back with Jack Bushman, I just want to take a moment to say thank goodness that 2020 is mercifully over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, football, and NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts. Jack, we're back. Segment two, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Detroit Red Wings. We're division rivals again. I'm excited as hell for it. But first, I want to back it up a little bit. and talk about some of these moves that Stan Bowman has made, not some of the contracts that he's given out, but the trades that he made in an attempt to be able to keep his core together and keep that contendership window open for as long as possible. Now, listen, at the end of the day, they contended and won Stanley Cups over a 6-year period. I think when you build a contender, you're hoping for a 5-year window. It worked out better than anybody's wildest dreams. But I think when we look back at what could have been and all the missteps along the way, I think that you guys probably have a lot of bad feelings about some of the trades that he made in an attempt to kind of keep everything together. What were Stan Bowman's biggest mistakes, you know, from 2011 on?
The biggest mistake, it has to be the Artemi Panarin trade. I mean, first thing that comes to everybody's mind, Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad. I understand why the move happened when it did. I understand Stan's intentions because Saad was a great piece for the Blackhawks when he was here. That top line of Taze, Saad, and Hossa was a force on both sides of the puck. And having him back, theoretically, it did look good on paper. But giving up Artemi Panarin, obviously, he didn't know what he was going to do. Didn't know he was going to go that crazy, become arguably the top player in the NHL. The problem with that deal is the return just was not nearly enough. And the Blackhawks, they knew they had to get rid of Artemi Panarin. They knew they were in cap hell. And signing him to a long-term extension wasn't a possibility. But the mistake was, one, the return, obviously, as I just said. And two, they traded him right after he signed a bridge deal. So theoretically, they could have still had Artemi Panarin for 2 more years and then figured out what to do with this problem. Instead, Stan thought he could outsmart everyone, jump the gun, get something back in return while we could. And it turns out that return for Artemi Panarin is nowhere even close to the level, the caliber of player that he was when he was with the Blackhawks. So I think that's the number one biggest mistake that Stan Bowman's made.
You know, I remember watching that year of the Blackhawks and watching Panarin and Kane on the same line. Like I was illegally streaming games in Michigan just to be able to watch those guys. Like, I've never seen two players that have
on a string.
They're the same people skill wise and the way they play the game. And it was like, they're twins on the ice.
It was
and
magic.
It was one of my favorite times of watching that team. And when I wrote down before that I wanted to ask you is, do you remember where you were? Because I remember where I was when I heard that Panarin was traded from.
Exactly. Chicago. I was working my crappy college job. I was working at Panera Bread Company. Shout out Panera Bread Company for their very good, but
ironic. Panera Bread, Panarin, the right. Bread man
right.
gets traded.
Right. Wow, Nolan. I know. I thought about that too.
Okay, cool. Glad I'm not the only one.
I was working and I picked up my phone and I saw a text from my dad and I had the push notification too. And my dad is like, what are we doing? And then I read about Joel Quenneville storming out of the pre-draft meeting, found out not only that they traded Panarin, but they also traded warrior Nicholas Hjalmarsson, probably the most loved guy in the NHL. Dude would take a puck to the chomps for a Stanley Cup.
One of the best defensive defensemen in the NHL at the time.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Blackhawks don't win 3 cups without him, no doubt.
No,
my mind.
Absolutely not.
And no then doubt in my mind.
That guy, too, going to Arizona on top of Panarin, like that was the moment that it really switched for me where, like, I don't understand where this guy's taking this team. And I completely, completely disagreed with it. And it was also starting the time where the Red Wings were actually like, okay, it's time for us to tank. So I like watching teams rebuild and stuff right. like that. It's fun for me. I mean, not watching it, but paying attention to what they do. But another thing I wanted to ask you is I almost don't understand this, the trading away a player like Andrew Shaw or a Brandon Saad and then bringing him back 2 years later. Like, you don't normally see that in
talking about, man. Valtteri Filppula has been back for like two years now.
I can't believe you guys are still paying him.
Yeah, I know.
I can't believe he's still alive.
So I think what I wanted to ask is just, is that with Blackhawks fans, was that a welcomed addition back? Is getting Saad back and getting Shaw back? Or is that like more people that you think you're like, it's time to move on from this guy? We weren't able to pay him. Like
that process has definitely dragged on too long. It seems like for like 5 years we've been bringing guys back. There's a huge list I've seen on Twitter before of like 15 guys we've gone and traded for a second time. As for Saad, I think he kind of got the shit end of the stick, will ya, being traded for Artemi Panarin. So no one really thought too highly of him per se. But Andrew Shaw, I think some people were happy to get back just because the Blackhawks really missed some grit in their lineup. They were a softer team since he left. He will make boneheaded penalties. That's just Andrew Shaw. Cue up the double middle finger, him flicking off gold moment. But I hope that's not something the Blackhawks continue to keep doing, especially throughout this rebuilding process. It would just make negative sense to keep.
Yeah, that's gotta be over. I almost feel like it was a thing where like, all right, I get, we traded Panarin away, but Brandon Saad's coming back. Like,
I had another trade come off the top of my head. That was a bad Stan Bowman one. Sorry to backtrack, but arguably just as bad was the Teuvo Teravainen. Horrible.
I have that written down as well. Like that was just to get rid of Bickle's contract. And I don't
$4 million.
Was he like ninth overall or something like that? No, it was.
Teuvo was like 18th or something.
He fell down a little bit.
Yes.
I want to like, that was a, that's a solid rookie prospect. He played his rookie year, didn't he?
We won the Stanley Cup with him and he played an impact on the third line with Antoine Vermette. He was great. And we literally threw in a like superstar. Threw in a superstar as a sweetener.
I think that might have been a precursor to the Panarin and stuff, where it's just like, I've never understood what Stan's doing. And then with him being promoted to as hockey out, it's like that's like the nail in the coffin where it's, I don't understand what Wirtz is thinking when he's doing, making these deals and how he's backing Bowman so much. I don't like Stan Bowman at all.
Yeah. They've definitely doubled down on him and it's 100% a questionable decision. My biggest problem with it, it's really by naming him president of hockey operations. He doesn't in a sense have much of a different role in his day-to-day life. Isn't going to change all that much. And how he affects the Blackhawks, it's not really changing all that much. What I do have a problem with though, was the Blackhawks, they had this opportunity. They went out and they got a completely new president to run the business side of this organization. So they obviously wanted to go out and get fresh eyes to kind of, you know, run things differently, especially in these tough times with COVID financially. And the Blackhawks had that same opportunity to do it with the hockey side. They could have kept Stan at GM and named someone else president of hockey ops, and they didn't do that. They let him do both. And now the only one he's reporting to is Rocky, who, I mean, yeah, Rocky might have some say in what goes on, but let's be honest, Rocky's not running the day-to-day operations of the Blackhawks. So at least the on ice terms. So that was my real issue with it, is that the Blackhawks, they pretty much said, no, we're fine with just Stan. They passed up on another opportunity to bring in a fresh set of eyes and help guide this rebuilding process. And clearly, you know, it hasn't been going the smoothest, if, you know, they hadn't noticed the last couple of years. So,
all right. Well, we got to get into some stuff that's been going on today. Cause the reason we got you in here is because we are about to play you guys 8 times. There's going to be 8 meetings. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be the toilet bowl every single time. I'm excited as hell. But I'm just curious because I feel like you mentioned that nice little playoff run. Like, yeah, there'll be like, that's really good for the young guys who's going to be like the next wave and the next core coming up. But like, I guess I was kind of under the impression that they were maybe back on an upswing, like coming back into this year. And obviously a lot has changed since that playoff series and the day that we are recording this. Alex Nylander has gone out for basically the entire season. Kirby Dach is out for basically the entire season. And your captain, Jonathan Toews, is out with a scary situation, an undisclosed medical situation or illness or something along those lines. What changed before that? Because they made it public that they were about to enter into a rebuild when it looked like they had a nice, you know, thing going. And sorry, this conversation or this question is so long, but I'm curious to see what happens with that, because we went through something similar in Detroit to where you have these young guys coming up. You're like, oh, this is the next wave. Sick that they get to be here on the tail end of Zetterberg. How awesome that Larkin gets to play on this team. And then next thing you know, because they were going for it in those years, now Dylan Larkin has to suffer through the worst seasons of the franchise while the face of the team. And so I've always thought that that was kind of interesting, that the Blackhawks pretty much did the same thing where they didn't admit it. They weren't doing well. And now by the time that, the team really hits the sewer, it's the young guys who are going to be kind of the face of the franchise.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting point that you brought up, and I haven't really thought of it that way, but I think it all really changed with Corey Crawford. Honestly, I think once we realized that, and I'll say
that's another thing we got to get to.
Yeah, right. Corey Crawford, we already talked about it. The four key pieces, Taze Kane, Keith Seabrook, full no movement clauses. Blackhawks really can't even move him if they wanted to. Corey Crawford was the one guy of this core that didn't have a full no movement clause, and the Blackhawks had control over. Seems kind of messed up, but.
And they let him walk in free agency.
Right. And I think it came to the point where they had to make a choice and say, do we want to hold on to this and hope that next year we can maybe be a little bit better and get lucky? Or if we don't re-sign Crawford, we're really looking at no one in the system who has any experience at all. And with the cap situation, it was going to be tough to go out and get one of the prime goaltenders that were on the market. So I think the decision to let Corey Crawford walk into free agency was ultimately what pushed them into this rebuild. And then it was actually like 4 or 5 days after Crawford went to free agency, they announced publicly that they were heading into this rebuild period.
But would, so since you guys had Lehner and you traded him, was he not going to get the money from Chicago that he felt that he was owed? Was that the reason why you traded him? Because yeah. I thought it was going to be Crawford gone at the deadline or at free agency this free agency, and you guys keeping Lehner.
Right. So I'll tell you this. 1 year ago today, the Blackhawks had both Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford. Now we have neither of them. And my jaw is dropping.
Can you tell
that.
Me who are your goalies?
Well, we have Kevin Lankinen. He won the world championship with Finland. Be on the lookout for Kevin Lankinen. We have Colin we have Colin Delia, who actually he came up a couple of years ago and he performed kind of well when Corey Crawford had his concussions. And then there's Malcolm Subban, who's looked nothing like a first round pick in his career. So for sure, it's definitely a tough situation in goal right now for the Blackhawks. And what happened with Lehner was, according to at least the inside sources around Chicago, the beat writers and whatnot, it just never felt like they were seeing eye to eye in terms of money. And, you know, after Lehner went out and signed that super cheap deal with Vegas, everyone was like, oh, you weren't going to offer him this. It's like, no, he wasn't going to sign here for that in Chicago. So it seemed like the two sides right before the deadline were kind of having a falling out in terms of how long the contract should be and the dollar amount and whatnot. So ultimately we just decided to cut our losses and, take what we could get for Robin Lehner. That's another deal. I still just don't think we got enough back in return for him.
All right. So then over the next couple months, all hell breaks loose. Nylander, Doc, Taves, I just mentioned it. They're all out for the season. What does this team look like now? Are they the worst team in the league? Do you think that they can contend for that spot? Or, I mean.
It's tough because.
Because I was looking at you guys' line combos the other day. No offense.
The bottom six is booty. The bottom six is for sure going to be cheap.
Bottom 10.
Right. Maybe. Probably. It's going to be the Patrick Kane show for sure. And the concerning part is we weren't very good defensively with Corey Crawford last year. So now we don't have Corey Crawford. We swapped Nikita Zadorov for Olli Maatta. So it's like, all right, maybe we got a little better defensively. We also, Boqvist gets another year, Ian Mitchell stepping up. So maybe there's a chance we're a little bit better defensively, but at best, probably still a middle of the pack team in terms of team defense. And then, as you said, you look at our offense and it's really Patrick Kane, Alex DeBrincat, and Dylan Strome on that top line. I am interested to see what happens with Carl Soderberg. He's been a decent offensive guy throughout his career. So I think he'll be all right in that opportunity. But besides those top two lines, our bottom six is very defensive minded. We really don't have any goal scorers and we don't have a good goaltender. So it's looking like we're going to have a problem stopping the puck going in our net. And we're also going to have a problem putting the puck in the other team's net. That usually equals not good by my calculations.
Well, you're talking to the right guys, because we know about that.
We just lived through one of the worst seasons in NHL history. So,
and you didn't even get the first pick.
Ethan, save your question for just one more second, because first I got to talk to the folks at home about rockauto.com. That's right, they're back, folks. Our greatest auto parts sponsor ever. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models out there, it is now impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. Jack, quick question. What is your least favorite part about going to the auto parts store, IRL?
Probably talking to people about stuff I know nothing about.
And I'm sure a lot of people sitting at home feel the same. Well, thank goodness for rockauto.com. They're a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Now, here's a dirty little secret I'm going to let you guys in on. You're listening? Come here. Chain stores, they have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. It's a really messed up, kind of sick game that they play. But rockauto.com's prices, they're always the same for everybody. They're always reliably low. They always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. Don't tell anybody I told you that. Just go on over to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And when you get there, just write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box, so that they know we sent you. That's all we ask in return for giving you guys these amazing deals, this amazing catalog of auto parts to choose from. They've got amazing selection. They've got reliably low prices, and they've got all the parts that your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Last gun of the play in this period. All right, before we get into our division rival preview to close things out with Jack Bushman from the Locked On Blackhawks podcast, I got to tell you to head on over to the Locked On NHL podcast, because we're getting ready for the start of the regular season with Sarah Avampato and the Locked On NHL preview series. Previews all 31 teams, division by division, and who to pick up and who to drop in your fantasy leagues, courtesy of Locked On Fantasy host Scott Cullen. Subscribe to Locked On NHL wherever you get your podcasts. All right. Ethan, we're back. Did you have a question before we went into break? Because I thought you were going to say something. Go ahead.
This question should have been asked in part one of the interview, but I forgot about it.
That happens.
Yeah. Well, it's just another quick deal that I didn't really understand at the time. But I think it's kind of worked out the same for both teams. The trading the young right shot bigger defenseman in Joakim Haru for Nylander. I kind of thought that Joakim Haru was going to kind of jump into that top four and kind of be there with Blomqvist. I thought that was kind of going to kind of be the future of this team. And then it's kind of a gamble to go out and get Nylander at this point with what he did in Buffalo. What was your thinking on that?
Yeah, for sure an interesting trade by Stan, and a one-for-one swap too. The thing about Henry Joakim Haru...
This guy's addicted to one-for-ones that he doesn't
right,
win.
Right, right. The thing about Henry Joakim Haru was he was kind of a Quenneville guy. Quenneville really liked him early on in the season, and once we got rid of Quenneville, it kind of seemed like he fell out of favor with Jeremy Colleton. He wasn't receiving the same minutes or the same opportunities once Colleton came in. And the Blackhawks have had a lot of defenseman prospects in their system for the last 3 or 4 years. Adam Boqvist, first-round pick. Nicholas Beaudin, another first-round pick. Ian Mitchell, a guy who's just arriving on the scene now, a second-round pick. And with that surplus of young defensemen, I think we kind of saw the logjam that was going to come there. And I think we understood that Joakim Haru didn't work as well in Jeremy Colleton's scheme. So I think they tried to just get what they could as best in return for him. But Nylander was a huge gamble. I mean, the guy wasn't even really doing well in the AHL when he was with Buffalo. And I'll tell you,
those Dylan Strome vibes.
Watching Alex Nylander. No, he's not even close to Strome. Watching Alex Nylander is painful. It's painful because.
Oh yeah, I just thought I was just meant like the whole turnover, how bad Strome was in Phoenix.
Oh right, right, right.
And he comes into Chicago and puts up.
We were hoping for that. He was 51-58 in 2018-19 when he got here. Yeah, he was really good, and then he had 38-58 last year. But yeah, it's been a tough trade. What's made it kind of easier is that Henry Yokiharju didn't exactly have the greatest year with Buffalo last year. He didn't turn into a top four defenseman or anything like they were hoping to right away. So I think that kind of makes it sit better with Blackhawks fans, but I still, that's another trade where it just makes you scratch your head because Nylander, he has talent, but he's just never been able to produce wherever he's played. And as I said, even in the AHL, when we first acquired him, I remember looking at his numbers in the A and I was like, this guy was picked eighth. Like it's concerning for sure. So I think that was just a little bit too big of a gamble. But I think that's a trade that we'll be able to talk more about in probably 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And we'll be able to tell who really won it.
I don't know how we haven't talked about Quenville's canning.
Yeah.
That was another thing too.
Another one. I'll never forget where I was, by the way.
Jesus, where were you?
I woke up in my bed in college, woke up and I could not believe it. They just fired the wrong guy. It was that simple. They fired the wrong
guy. I know. That was another. It's like, I know I said like that was the point, but like that was the book slamming shut. Okay,
it,
I'm just
done. It really sucked. And I understood that, you know, maybe Quenville was fallen, you know, soft years in the locker room, maybe after him being there for so long, but just such a respected guy, a known player's coach.
Very and, Phil Jackson-esque ushering right. out. Like, with the GM who built it all is like, I don't want him anymore. And
right,
because like, the petty indifferences, and then, but that's not the guy to go, but he's also the one in charge
that
gets to make that decision. So.
Yeah, definitely one of those scenarios where Joel doesn't control all the moves that go on behind closed doors, and he obviously had his say in it. He wasn't one to shy away from speaking up about, you know, his displeasures with what they were doing and stuff. So yeah, it was just a sad one that unfortunately got pinned on the wrong guy, and we're still sitting around with Stanny Bowman.
All right, so what are you expecting, I guess, going into the season? Are you optimistic? Are you still pretty down in the dumps? Like, how are you feeling about it?
I'm honestly optimistic. It would really have to be a very weird season for me not to be optimistic about a Blackhawks team, just because.
You mean like a 17 win season, something like that?
I'm still intrigued by it because. There's so many storylines that need to be figured out, and I'm really intrigued by it, honestly. I'm really interested to see how the Blackhawks are going to go about this rebuild. I'm interested to see how Adam Boqvist is going to fill in, taking the next step, if Ian Mitchell is going to be a top four guy like we hyped him up to be, if Dylan Strome is going to lock himself in as part of this rebuild. He just signed that bridge deal. So while, yeah, it's probably going to be a wash in terms of wins and losses. I'm not going to lie to anyone, but I still feel like this is going to be a crucial year for the rebuild, and we're really going to find out what pieces of the puzzle we already have and what pieces of the puzzle we still need to go out and get in order to get back to that championship window we grew accustomed to for those 6 or 7 years. So I think it's still going to be fun, even though, you know, it's going to be probably a 20 win season at best, maybe.
I mean, Jimmy Howard's still
yeah, Jimmy Howard's still out there if you want to pick him up.
You know what sounds great for a rebuild? A 37-year-old netminder.
Coming off an 882 save percentage and a 20-game losing streak. Honestly, and that's the thing that like gives me pause about the Blackhawks this season, is their goaltending situation is so up in the air, like we talked about.
Right.
The defense is not really – I mean, like it's kind of league average, below league average slightly. And then – I mean, this is an issue that the Red Wings had last year. This is why I worry for you, Jack. Actually, I don't worry. I wish you suffering, to be quite honest.
I was going
to
say.
But this reminds me a lot of the situation of last year's Red Wings, where goaltending's up in the air. You don't know what you're going to get from it. It turned out to be really bad. The defense, we all kind of knew, was going to be pretty bad. We knew that the Red Wings were going to have to kind of plug and play with some of their younger pieces. That became more and more evident as the season went on and guys got hurt, much like you guys are dealing with injuries at this current point in time. And it was very much, okay, this is a lost season. We're trying for the number one overall pick. We're trying to see who will be here long-term. But the fact of the matter is nobody really jumped out and stole a spot. Nobody jumped out and said, I need to be on this team and I need to be in your plans going forward. And so I'm wondering if that's a situation that the Blackhawks are about to enter, to where, I mean, they go into the season with kind of, well, we'll just wait and see. We are technically a rebuilding team, so I'm not really having expectations too high. But then there's just high potential for shit to hit the fan, is what I'm
definitely
saying.
Definitely. And I'm first off going to say, I hope that doesn't happen to the Blackhawks. I hope our prospects step up and make themselves known and make themselves officially parts of this rebuilding process. But if that doesn't happen, I still think that knowing we have Kirby Dach in our back pocket, knowing Patrick Kane's still going to be here, knowing Jonathan Toews is still going to be here, and coming out with, you know, probably a top five draft pick, I still don't think that's the absolute end of the world for the Blackhawks. And yeah, it definitely could get real gross. I'm not, obviously, with a question mark at goaltending, we have no experience really there at all. We could be allowing 5-6 goals a game, and it could be, you know, as you said, 15 wins we're picking in the lottery. But if that happens, I still think we have enough pieces where we know that's not going to become a common thing.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think we know that Kirby Dach is going to be really good. I think we, us Blackhawks fans, can say that with confidence. Kirby Dach's looked really good. And before he suffered that injury with Canada,
if there ever was a freak injury, freak injury,
such a hit that looked so nonchalant.
And he didn't just like mess something up. I saw that photo that picture. It was like eight pixels. And it was just like, it was Ethan texted to me at like 11:30 at night one night. I was like, Jesus, dude, I'm in bed. But
the last 2 weeks of 2020 were an absolute nightmare. What happened? It was like, we got to escort Patrick Kane out of Chicago before he gets hit by a bus or something, dude. He's going to be, I was talking with Sarah Avampato on Lockdown NHL, and she was like, you guys got to get Patrick Kane one of those hamster wheels to walk around Chicago in.
For real, you might have to. All right, let us put our arms around each other real quick for 1 second and be on the same team here. How are you feeling about the rest of the division? Because I think I've settled on extremely mediocre.
Yeah, besides the Blackhawks and the Red Wings, I think we both expect them to be 6 or 7 and 8. I don't think that's a surprise. But besides Dallas and Tampa Bay, it's pretty middle of the pack. I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Carolina and Columbus, though. They're two teams that they're kind of were right there, and they have some pieces. It's definitely not deep like the Pacific's not deep at all, like the North or the East. I don't think it's going to be that tough of a division. So I think the Blackhawks are going to, and the Red Wings will find some wins in there playing Nashville. Nashville's kind of, what are they doing? Florida's kind of at that same point. I don't think it's going to be too challenging for the Blackhawks. I'm not that worried about the competition. Playing Tampa 8 times, though, is definitely a worry. They might win 45. They might win 45 to 50 games.
And I just think that, like, yes, you mentioned the guys at the top. Tampa, I think Carolina's a cup contender. I don't think you can call Columbus a cup contender just yet.
No, but Torts always has his team ready to go somehow.
Exactly.
What about Pierre-Luc Dubois saying, hey, guys, I kind of want to go play for a cool city here. I don't really want to be here anymore.
Columbus kind of blows.
Did you guys? Did you guys?
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Did you guys see his?
He's kind of like, you tell me I come to a big city. This is not a big city.
Yeah. Did you guys see his media availability from like yesterday, the first day of camp? It was so awkward. And I've never really watched him before, so I don't know if this is how he just talks. But he was like, he sounded really nervous. And like he was struggling through it. He's like, what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm just here to be a good teammate. Too. And then when I'm as if I play for Columbus, the Blue Jackets, if that logo is on my jersey, I'm gonna play. So
today, Junior.
Yeah, it was very much like oh man, this dude is like. Like, you know, when you do something bad and you know that like people are going to find out about it eventually, and then like, or like when your dog poops and like, they know they pooped, but then they like, as soon as they see
and then they
you,
put a they
like
start to cower.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what happened to Pierre-Luc Dubois in his media availability yesterday.
What a situation. I mean, they signed him to a bridge deal, but it sounds like it only got worse. Like,
I know. And I thought it's, I really feel bad for those teams. I was on an NHL, like just a random like hockey Facebook group, and I saw some guy post this letter, an open letter to Gary Bettman, just some middle-aged dude. And he was like, Mr. Gary, he's a Winnipeg Jets fan, and it's just really, really sad how nobody wants to play there. And they all just get to leave and go places that they want to be. And he gets that Winnipeg isn't the nicest place to live, but they have good schools. And, you know, it's a good place to raise a family. So and sad. He just wished, and like, it was just like so sad because he's just like, why does everybody keep leaving? And he's just like this middle-aged dude. And like, I feel that on a very, very real level. Right. I 100% feel that as somebody who has watched the Lions for, you know, my entire lifetime and seen how many of those greats walk out the door, either through free agency or via retirement. and so like, I really do feel that. And I think it's like maybe in the NHL a lot different than in some other sports where like, there are some cities that are literally just like uninhabitable because of the cold. And it just sucks to be there.
That's a really good point because think about, and Columbus is a great example, because imagine the Columbus Blue Jackets were the Tampa Bay Blue Jackets. Do you think they lose Artemi Panarin, Sergei Bobrovsky, Matt Duchene? They lose everyone? You think if they're in Tampa Bay, they're going to lose all those guys? I guarantee not.
Yeah.
So that does really, really suck. And that poor old dude.
I know. And like, they're just, I know that there are so many fan bases that feel that way. And it's just the nature of the beast. You're a small market team. That's what's going to keep happening to you. Back on the topic of the rest of the division. And we'll talk about this to close things out because we have run extremely long here. I just think that we talked about those three teams at the top, but I think four through eight, I think there's going to be a lot of like back and forth. Like Dallas is going to be probably not bad next year. Tyler Seguin's out, I think, for the entire season.
Is he?
I don't know.
He's screwed up though. He had surgeries.
I know he had a bunch of.
Yeah. So I mean, who knows what they're going to be? They were kind of a randomly in the Stanley Cup final team. But I just think there's going to be a lot of like getting one over on people. Like, I think just those weeks where like, you're just gonna be like, oh, they stole 3 out of 4 from Florida, you know, like, oh, they stole, they split with Nashville. And I think there's going to be a lot of those to where these teams aren't very good. And when you play them over and over again, you're bound to get one because the other team's bound to take you for granted at some point, or because they played you so many times, they think they know your game and things like that. And I think that's, honestly, league-wide going to create just a little bit more parity with things.
Not to mention too that it's like a baseball schedule this year,
right?
Like, you're telling me if you guys are playing each other, you know, two nights out of three, like there's people, you know, people have good games and bad games. I mean, you have to play them 8 times and you're playing everybody at least back to back, everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, there's gonna be wins and losses. It's going to be much different than the Red Wings losing 14 in a row, I hope.
I don't think there will be any 13-game losing streaks this season.
The middle of the division's up for grabs 100%. Besides, I have Tampa obviously at 1. Carolina's probably 2. I think Dallas still has the defense and goaltending to be 3. Defense and goaltending will win you games in this league 100%. But besides that, Columbus, Nashville, Florida – what are they going to do? They have rosters where you look at them on paper and you say that it could really be either end of the spectrum. You could see this team playing well, and maybe they surprise some people, or also you would not be surprised in the least to say, oh, Nashville sucked this season, or Carolina took a step back, or Columbus, excuse me, took a step back. I don't think anyone would be surprised by that notion at all. So I do agree. I think, especially in this baseball-like schedule, there's going to be some more victories up for grabs than in a normal year, just because you're playing a team 8 times. People are going to get theirs. That's just how it's going to go.
I also think that that's going to make the losing streaks a lot worse. Like when you lose 4 in a row to Florida, like that's going to suck way worse than losing 1 to Florida, 1 to Tampa, 1 to the Thrashers, you know, whatever it may be. As the season goes on, I think that's going to make it kind of suck a lot worse. And you're like, oh, dude, we got to play Dallas again.
Play them again. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so sick of these guys. We just played them 7 times. And
there's a lot of like four, there's a lot of 4-game stretches too, which I think makes it interesting. Like, obviously a lot of them are going to be like two game series, but a
bunch of mini playoff series.
Yeah. What do you guys, since you're in the Eastern time zone, what are your thoughts about all the start times for the games? Have you seen that? Did they get rid of the Eastern time zone?
They got rid of the Eastern time zone?
Maybe I'm – oh, no. They only got rid of the Mountain and the Pacific. I apologize. Did you guys see that, though? Like, all the starts are coming at – you didn't see that? All the starts are coming at, like, 7:30 this – or 7 o'clock, something like that with the schedule. Yeah, they got rid of Mountain times. I'm pretty sure the Blackhawks – I forget what it was. I'm going to have to go take a gander on the old Twitter real quick.
NHL TV is going to be popping.
Right. Good. Because I saw – where was it? I got to find the schedule. But I know the Blackhawks aren't – like every game the Blackhawks are playing this year is going to be over by 10 o'clock because they're not going to be having to play in the Mountain times or the Pacific time zones, and I'm assuming that –
isn't that nice, dude? Aren't you excited about that? When we came over to the East, it was like, honestly, you don't even realize just how amazing it is.
Right. Especially you guys playing over in like Los Angeles, a 10:30 start. That sounds horrendous.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't watch it. I didn't watch any of those games growing up.
Very much in bed.
I have to get up early. I'll watch the first period, but I have to go to bed.
Third period puck drops at 1 a.m. sharp. I'll meet you on the 18th green.
All right, Jack. We've had a ton of fun. Thank you for taking the time to dig in to some of the Blackhawks information. Dig up some of those old scars that I know you had probably been healing for some time. Where can people find you on Twitter? What else do you do? Anything that might be of interest to some Metro Detroiters or just hockey fans in general?
Yeah, so if you have any interest in checking out what's going on with the Chicago Blackhawks at this point as we head into the season, you can find my podcast on Twitter at @LO_Blackhawks. And I also have my own Blackhawks, strictly Blackhawks account at Talkin' Hockey. Me personally, you can find me at @JackBushman2 on Twitter. All three spots are good sources for Blackhawks news. It's basically all I'm doing all the time. So you can find me on there.
Perfect. And we are going to have to keep up with you guys since I mentioned we do play you 8 times this year. Thank you so much, man. I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the season, maybe after one of these like 4-game benders where, you know, that's like 8-6 every game. I'm sure there'll be a lot of those. It'll be fun when these two teams get together. You could throw out the record books. All right, man. Appreciate you. We'll see you. And we'll see you all back here tomorrow. Same time, same place. It's your team every day.
You're Locked On Red Wings, your daily podcast on the Detroit Red Wings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.